Happy anniversary.
This album's celebrating an anniversary.
Morena, Sam.
Morena.
How you going?
I'm all right. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
It's day one of Auckland Uni semester.
Yes, it is. There's, and there's so many people on
downstairs.
Campus.
I know.
I thought that I owned the school for a while.
Now you can't go anywhere without being like crushed.
Yeah, I don't even go here.
Get out of my way.
Yeah.
But anyway, looking at a very, very influential record, probably one of the most influential records of all time, certainly in the alternative rock punk indie scenes, The Velvet Underground and Nico. Released in 1967. It's turning 50 years old this year.
Never heard of it.
The Velvet Underground, they're in New York by Lou Reed and John Cale, and they would ultimately also recruit Sterling Maureen Mo Tucker, which formed the classic lineup of the band, and the lineup that would record this album, with the addition, of course, of German singer-songwriter Nico. And 1965 and 1967, the Velvet Underground, of course, had a great association with pop artist Andy Warhol. They were the house band at his New York studio, The Factory, and also took part in his Exploding Plastic Inevitable events, which were a series of multimedia events that Warhol put on in New York, which were very famous.
Yes, studio.
I think some of them might have taken place there. He also had a studio, The Factory.
Oh, yeah, and The Factory.
The Factory, right. Which was his own personal studio.
You know, as naughty as it is, I don't actually know that much about Andy Warhol, but, like, I've only ever heard about stuff and never read anything about it.
Yeah,
so, yeah, I mean, you know as much as I do.
So they were very much connected to the underground art and music scene in New York in the mid-60s, and this scene was very much outside of everything else that was going on musically and culturally. When you think hippiedom, flower power and all that was kind of at its peak, and psychedelic rock and all that kind of stuff, and the band had pretty much nothing to do with that musically or artistically, I guess. And this was kind of the meeting of experimental rock music with avant-garde art, basically, and film, and quite nihilistic attitudes, which at the time were quite revolutionary to all this kind of peace and love, you know, sort of thing. Hence why they're considered very influential in the development of punk much later on. So, in terms of the album itself, when they ultimately got around to recording this record, a lot of the tracks had already been written and performed at these. Musically, this was pretty much like nothing else that was happening at the time, really, especially in America, this kind of art meets pop like it had never really done before, with lots of experimentation with sounds and lyrics and styles. And it was actually John Cale, incidentally, that was the biggest driver of this experimentation. He encouraged strongly the use of different and alternative ways of producing music. So things like deadpan vocals, which are quite prominent throughout Nico and Lou Reed's deadpan vocals. There's lots of droning viola playing, as you'll hear on a couple of tracks, a distorted guitar, and also Tucker's very unique drum playing, which is almost tribal sounding in nature. She hardly ever used it. It was really just the bass and toms, basically.
Yeah.
A very minimalistic kind of style of playing there. But also lyrically, they didn't hold back. These were very, very different experiences to what you'd usually hear in kind of, you know, the Beatles' She Loves You. This was far and away from that. This was talking about things like drug use and prostitution and sadism and sexual deviancy and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, as you can see, quite X-rated for the time.
Yeah.
So all this experimentation led to them being seen as what was the first art rock album. So art rock being seen as music that sort of reflects a challenging or avant-garde approach rock, which also makes use of modernist, experimental, unconventional elements. And it also aspires to elevate rock from teen entertainment to an artistic statement, notable for a more experimental and conceptual outlook on music. And I think this pretty much sums up what's happening on this record. These people were artists as much as they were musicians, and having Andy Warhol as their manager definitely helped as well. That the art of this, the whole concept of art in this record extends to the very famous album cover as well, which is the famous banana, which incidentally, the originals, if you can peel back the yellow and underneath it would be pink.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So, and it's interesting because at that time, people were paying a lot more attention to the cover art and making an actual piece of artwork to go on the cover instead of just a mugshot of the group.
Yes, yeah.
So things like this particular album cover were becoming more prominent as people thought more about what...
And also the format of, like, graphic... And from a graphic design perspective, the format of the record was a larger surface area.
Mm,
yeah. A lot more to... Like, there was the one that you could open up.
Yeah.
There were all these different options. And once CDs came in, there was still, like, the little booklet that you could get, but it didn't have the same as a vinyl.
No.
Yeah. So...
Yeah.
I guess that's part of it as
definitely,
well.
Definitely, definitely. All right, so we're going to start things off with the opening track on the record, Sunday Morning, and this was the final song actually recorded for the album, as the producer Tom Wilson felt that they needed a song which could be a single, and as a result this is probably the most single sounding or pop sounding track on the record. Quite lush production and overall pop sound, and not typical of the sound you hear on a lot of the other tracks on the album. So yeah, it's a nice 60s kind of pop song.
It's just a restless feeling by my side. Early dawning, Sunday morning. It's just the wasted years so close behind. Watch out, the world's behind. There's always someone around you who will call. It's nothing at all. Sunday morning, and I'm falling. I've got a feeling I don't want to know. Nothing at all.
Saying this is like music to make burgers do.
Oh yeah, I used to work at a burger joint, What Up Handmade Burgers, and I used to turn on the Velvet Underground when I opened up the grill.
That's nice. I
could
just see that, you know, those burgers.
Yeah,
Sunday morning.
Yeah, it's not a very glamorous job, but it certainly feels a lot nicer with the Velvet Underground.
Yeah.
Around. Yeah.
Yeah. I was also just going to say, there's a story about this track that Nico was originally going to sing this track, but Lou Reed was like, he felt he could sing it in a more... he thought he could sing it in a more feminine way than Nico.
He does a great job.
He does. Yeah. They actually did record, I think they recorded it or demoed this track with Nico.
Okay, I can imagine what it would have been.
Sunday morning. She's got a very deep kind of thick German accent in her voice. So, But yeah, Lou Reed does a nice job. He's got a nice voice when he, you know, does these little pop numbers, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So the next track we're going to see is a complete departure from Sunday Morning. I'm Waiting for the Man. And this is one of the band's most well-known and popular tracks. It's got this heavy, distorted garage rock sound to it. In the guitar and the piano, kind of these thick dun 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 dun.
Yeah, it sounds like someone's bashing a trash can.
Dun 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 dun. And this is more resembles the sound that this record kind of takes more than Sunday Morning. And the song is actually about purchasing heroin from the perspective of the purchaser, with the man in the title being the drug dealer. So I'm waiting for the man, I'm waiting for the drug dealer. So here we are on track two, and we're already talking drugs, people.
Yeah, deal with it.
Shoes and a big straw hat.
love that little bass line at the end.
Oh, it's groovy, yeah.
Do you reckon the Reds talking to him being like, walk at home? Because that's like walking the bass, right? Like,
I reckon it could be, yeah, walk at home.
Yeah.
I also love how you can just make two chords sound so interesting.
Totally.
It's like, you only need two chords.
You only need two.
Yeah.
But you could have more if you wanted.
If you wanted, but, you know, two is fine. I was just going to say also that song and also Sunday Morning, massively covered by lots of people.
Yeah, because a lot of people covered songs back then.
Yeah, Bowie covered that song, I'm Waiting for the Man, quite famous cover with the Spiders from Mars. A glam rock kind of cover. And Sunday Morning's been covered by countless people as well, yeah. So we're now going to bring in our lovely German friend Nico on the next track, Thal. And this was the first track on the record where Nico takes the lead vocals. Nico, of course, German singer-songwriter and model, who was in Andy Warhol's clique of person in the 1960s, and was basically encouraged by Warhol to sing on this record, much to the band's disapproval. They didn't want her
Shock
on the record.
He
was like, they needed another singer, and a female singer, pretty much. And this one's another laid-back, mellow track. It's in with Nico's singing style. She's quite a mellow, laid-back kind of singer, even though she's got a very thick German-style singing voice.
Yeah.
And this song, incidentally, is about another one of Warhol's models, Eddie Sedgwick.
Yep. Yes.
And, yes, Femme Fatale.
Pain and misery, sad, tragic figure.
Yes.
One of the casualties of the scene, and she got that song written about her. What a woman.
I know, but it's such a lovely song.
Yeah, but she's just a little tease, like,
I know, damn.
It's a very cutting song.
Yeah, yeah.
Very cutting.
Incidentally, if you ever listen or get the a re-release of this album, the anniversary re-release, a deluxe edition, the whole entire, there's one disc on it that's entirely made up of Nico tracks that she recorded with the group. It's quite interesting, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's got a nice voice.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah. It's a shame she didn't stay with the group after this record.
Well, it was a very turbulent time.
Yeah. I guess people just move on, do other things.
Yeah.
We're going to continue with another Nico track. This one continues along this mellow. It's called I'll Be Your Mirror.
I love this song.
And this was actually the most difficult to record for Nico because the band wanted nice, slender vocals, which Nico struggled to provide.
Slender?
Slender.
What does that even sound like?
Sort of gentle, you know.
Oh, yeah. Right, okay.
They did countless takes and were actually about to give up and scratch the song until on the last take she got it just right and they recorded that take. And then they were so happy with the take that whenever they performed the song, decided to just use pre-recorded live vocals of Nico. And, yeah.
That's a bit of insult. I'm a singer, so I would just be like quite insulted by that. No wonder she didn't stick around.
They obviously were like, oh, we can't do a better job. We're just going to use you on everything, you know, every time we play it.
Yeah. But like only pre-recorded.
Maybe they shouldn't have played it.
I don't know. I don't know. Anyway. This is a brilliant song.
Yeah, it's a lovely song.
It is a brilliant take.
Yeah, it is.
It is a brilliant take.
Yep.
Anyway.
On your door to show that you're home. It has in your mind that inside you're twisted and unkind. Let me stand to show that you're blind. Please put down your hands, 'cause I see you. Darkness, so you won't be afraid when you think the night has in your mind that inside you twist unkind. Let me stand to show that you are blind. Please put down your hands, 'cause I see you.
Oh my god, we just got a real hard out text. they didn't leave their name. They just said, from Wikipedia, Nico once attacked a race woman in a restaurant with a smashed wine glass saying, I hate black people. So, yeah, fuck Nico. She can get... Nah. I'm so sorry to everyone that we even played her stupid song.
Yeah.
She's flat anyway.
Is it a reliable enough source?
Who cares? Like, okay, if someone's saying like racist rumors, like, are you a racist? Because, I mean, why would they even be talking about that in the first place?
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not a racist, why would they even be talking about it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to take a short break and we'll be back with the last song from the Velvet Underground and the Nemesis Nico. This is 95 BFM. You're listening to Morning Glory with Geneva.
Nemesis Nico.
Yeah, Nemesis Nico. This is Anniversary Albums with Sam.
You heard Rosalind got banished, right?
Shut up.
Yeah, and so she's still horny for Orlando. So she's going to dress up like one of the boys and try and get in his frickin'...
Oh, progressive.
Yeah.
Us?
Shakespeare's naughtiest romp, As You Like It, is given this summer festival treatment. We're bringing Glastonbury to the Auckland Summer Shakespeare Festival. Auckland Outdoor Summer Shakespeare for City of Auckland Clock Tower ends this Saturday. Get your tickets now from iTicket.
Wide, wide world out there, so wrap your eyes around more of it with the Auckland Film Society's 2017 season, starting Monday, March 6th. A full membership is just $160 with your student ID, less than $5 a film. You can even score a three-film sampler before April 1st for the very special price of only $25. with screenings every Monday at the Academy from 6:30, and Auckland Film Society membership is your ticket to the world's greatest cinema. For more details, visit aucklandfilmsociety.org.nz.
Sorry, Albert Park, but it's time to put your capoeira, philosophy debates and O-Week dry humping on hold for the afternoon, because AUSA has teamed up with everyone's favourite campus radio station to bring you 95 BFM Bands in the Park. Soak up the uncanny musical talents of Wellington's own The Phoenix Foundation with support from Dick and Scared of Girls. 95 BFM presents Bands in the Park with The Phoenix Foundation and friends. Free to everyone, live in Albert Park from midday this Friday. Thanks to AUSA.
Kia ora everybody, you're tuned into Morning Glory 95 BFM.
We have set off a ticking time bomb here.
Yeah, we've had a bit of an eye-opener. Nico is a racist and...
Lou Reed's an arsehole.
A-hole, I'd say.
Sorry.
We're reviewing the Velvet Underground.
Did they say why they're an
a-hole? But what we're doing here, if you've just tuned in, is that we're listening to the Velvet Underground. Nico... As our anniversary album, Sam Smith has collected all this information. It did not find this racist.
I didn't find anything about a-hole.
Thank you for your texts. It's good that we know now. And
just gonna say, a lot of musicians aren't good people, but they still make good music, even if they're not a good person.
Yeah, but like, is it still okay?
It's not okay.
Yeah. It doesn't make it okay if they just make like one song or two or like a whole album, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I feel weird about playing another song by them, but we're going to do it.
We're not going to play another song by Nico.
Another song by Nico, but you know.
Yeah.
People who affiliate with racists. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that's why she left the group. Maybe that's why they didn't like her that much.
Well, they didn't want her in the group initially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Raging racist.
Andy Warhol appreciated it.
Yeah, we had to like check on it just to see, and there's like an article in the
Guardian.
Yeah, so
anyway, put a massive downer on everything. Just the reception, a legacy of this record. So as you can imagine, this album has a massive legacy, despite not being commercially successful at all. In fact, the critics hated this record when it came out. It hardly got any reviews, and the reviews that it did get were all negative, pretty much.
And I've got a negative review.
Eh? You got a negative review. Negative reviews. The controversial content of the instantaneous ban from record stores. Many radio stations declined to play the album, and magazines declined to carry advertisements for it. This was largely due to the conservative nature of the industry, but also psychedelic rock was an underground art rock like this was in its infancy. It wasn't really known outside the alternative community, so a lot of the music industry just didn't really understand this music. Or what they were going for here. But this is an example of an album that has gained its recognition and legacy after the fact and years later. In fact, it wasn't until punk really that the music press began to this record and the influence it had on the development of punk. There is, of course, this old saying that not many people bought this album at the time, but those who did went on to form a band. That's probably true in a lot of respects. It wasn't heard by many people, but those who did hear it were influenced strongly by what they heard, because it was pretty much like nothing else at the time. Now seen as one of the most influential and greatest records ever made, Rolling Stone voted it the 13th greatest album of all time. It's listed in the America's National Recording Registry, which is a massive deal. And The Observer ranked it number one in their list of 40 albums that changed music.
So does that mean that the industry is full of a-holes and racists?
Yes. That's obvious. We just need to look at the...
Oh, man, people are really texting in relentlessly about how awful other famous people are. This is...
Oh, who else is this
James
now?
Brown's been brought up.
What's he got to do with the Velvet Underground?
Yeah, I know, but... I mean, we're
just opening a can of worms here.
Damn.
they'll be mentioning John Lennon next.
Oh, no. We just...
As you can see, this has influenced many styles of music across the spectrum, from punk to grunge, garage, pretty much everything, everything really. Not many records can claim to be as influential as this record, particularly in indie alternative circles.
True. And we need to change it up with influences.
Definitely. So we're going to finish with another popular track of theirs, Venus and Furs.
Okay.
And... this is one of the best examples on this record of the experimental art rock on the record. Throughout the track, there's a heavy drone played on viola. Well, the backbeat consists of just two bass drums and a tambourine, so very minimalist. But at the same time, lots of experimentation, and lyrically stays true to the rest of the record with themes of sadomasochism, bondage, and submission.
Nauseating.
Yeah, very much so.
Thank you very much, Sam.
You look confused, Geneva. You're right.
It because you put a lot of effort into this segment, so I appreciate that. Thank you for coming.
And next time, hopefully we won't open a can of worms like we have done today.
Apologies. But we'll make sure that...
It's a territory that comes with the reviewing a lot of musicians.
But I don't know. I don't think we should necessarily accept it.
No, we don't need to accept it. We should talk about it. Like last week, we talked about Prodigy and their video "Smack My Bitch Up."
Yeah.
And that got a lot of reaction.
True.
Yeah, it's good that we're talking about these things.
Yeah, but we should make sure we should make more of an effort.
Yeah, definitely.
So thank you very much for listening. I'm just gonna tune in. We've got the news coming up. I've got the gig guide, and I'll be here until 12. Thank you very much, Sam.
Peace.
shiny, shiny, shiny blue. Flash girl, child in the dark. Severin, your servant, comes in bells. Please don't forsake him. Strike, dear mistress, and cure his heart.
Happy anniversary to that album.
Happy anniversary.